Hello and welcome to episode 330 of Muse on Minis.
Musing and amusing.
This is John, and I'm all in on Protector Domenoth.
This is Josh, and I'm playing Mercs with maybe I don't immediately die to Ghost Fleet Answer.
I'm Nigel, and I play Kador.
This is Keith, and I play Crix. Or maybe Signar. Or maybe Crix. Or maybe Signar.
Almost certainly Crix. at least till January.
This is Seabass, and I play Madrak.
Oh, geez.
He's pretty good.
Wait, I thought we all agreed.
Yeah, no troll talk. You're not allowed to say what you play.
Yep.
All right. Yep, fair enough.
So, news and announcements. The Trollblood CID finally went live. That's pretty exciting.
John, did you have any thoughts about Trollbloods that you wanted to share?
Just that I don't feel like talking about them. How about you, Scott?
I guess there must not be much going on
I saw a Facebook thread where somebody said that he was upset that they raised Mulg's cost because he now feels that the piece is overcosted and won't be played, and I tend to agree. Scott? No, actually, I shouted him down because I couldn't believe my eyes.
Yeah, Mulg is ridiculous now.
Yeah.
Is the infinite attack thing still going through?
It's not infinite.
It's not infinite. It's just one action. You can only cast your Animus once.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, if it gets canceled, can't you just keep casting it? Or there's no
way? No, because you still cast it.
Okay. Yep. Well, that's not really a huge deal.
Josh, are you familiar with this?
The infinite attack thing? No.
It's not infinite.
Not infinite. It's one extra attack. So with Doomshaper 3, he has a once per game effect from his Scrollbearer that reduces Animus costs by one, reducing Mulg's Animus cost to zero.
Sure.
So if Mulg goes in and spends all five of his Fury with Doomshaper's Bond, he can then, on that turn, cast his Animus for free, all spells with a range of self target self, so he can spend a Fury to Arcane Vortex to cancel his own Animus, and then have a Fury to spare to buy an extra attack.
Ah, that's cute.
It is cute.
It is cute.
Scott, you really don't have anything to say about that, huh? That's weird, because you're all in on trolls. That's fine. We can talk about it next week if you're not excited to talk about it this week. Overcome with emotion. It's fine.
I'm sorry, Scott. I was going to talk with you about trolls this week, but John is a meanie.
Well, so it's up to John and Scott and the terms of their bet to let our listeners in on what's going on. But we probably should talk briefly about it. I'll give a grand total of 10 minutes.
Yeah, no, we could talk about trolls all we want. The only person who can't is Scott.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So we don't have to deny our listeners that. It's right. Too bad they won't be able to get his opinion, but maybe next week. I did say I was going to be nicer to Scott on this cast. But
that wasn't true.
Well, I had the best intentions. That was my goal, honestly. When I said it, I believed it.
But yeah, I don't think there was anything that came through the CID that wasn't as anticipated.
Yeah, it didn't.
I know they were waffling on whether to make Mulg force to cancel spells or spend to cancel spells, and I'm personally happy that it's spend. As a theoretical troll player, I would be happy that it.
So
go ahead.
So I do. There is one thing I want to add, because there's been a lot of discussion as to why that is the way it is. Reason why it is that way.
Scott.
No. This is not talking about trolls. It's talking about the decision behind a mechanic.
Okay.
This game mechanic.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you said no dojo. This isn't dojo.
Keith, this is essentially the experience when your kids become, when Aurora becomes like a teenager. This is exactly how she'll like get around arguments.
You only think it's actually like about four.
I'm not saying I'm going to use the car, but what if I like sit in it and then somebody else uses put the keys in it? And then so anyways, carry on.
So the reason that I understand it is that they wanted there to be some inherent risk. So if you want Mulg to have enough fury to Arcane Shield or to Arcane Vortex the immediate area against multiple spells, then you have to rile him up higher. If he's playing in a heavier battle group, that's going to come at a cost. That's why it's a spend instead of a force mechanic, because they wanted there to be kind of like a guessing game. Because if you rile him up and they don't cast any spells, you're stuck with a bunch of fury, which means you either have to plan around that for the rest of your turn, or you are just going to be stuck with a situation you really don't want, or you have to babysit a whelp to him to be able to mitigate that. And they wanted there to be some kind of additional like gamble or cost to that. That's that, to my understanding, is why that is.
I figured
then they
it
put
was
Serenity on the Dunia Knot.
And then they put Serenity on the Dunia Knot.
So it's like, eh, I've got this three extra fury kicking around.
Actually, having seen the new stone in action, it is really good now. It is really good that they have that action.
It's just maxed all the time.
Yeah.
Without caster input.
I was just going to say, I assumed that it was spend a fury to Arcane Vortex because it's spend a focus to Arcane Vortex, or mm-hmm. spend a power token to Arcane Vortex, or spend a corpse or soul to Arcane Vortex. So I assumed
having
that
it be force would just be a weird.
Just keep it consistent. That's when I read it. I assumed that's why it was that way, and I was like,
"Yeah,
that's a cool little interaction making it that way." But yeah,
does that mean you can do things like Rune Shaper, like blast Mulg, and have him spend focus to use it as like a ghetto focus or fury mechanic?
Sure.
That's kind of cute.
You have extra spells that you can't get any other value out of other than minus one fury. They can always be minus one fury for Mulg.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you just don't have, like, you know, whatever, something to do.
That's true.
And yeah, so the stone change went through. Earthborn's cost minus one, which I think is, it's nice. I think that's a beast that is going to start seeing more play. It's super strong. I think it's an undervalued piece in 2017, just because of the propensity for there to be some obstacle or obstruction somewhere within 2 inches of a place where it can contest meaningfully. And then it's immune to all the elements, which is quite relevant. Like Protector, it has a lot of fire in it. Legion has a lot of fire in it. Signar has an abundance of lightning in it.
Yeah, it's a very problematic scenario linchpin. Like, it's a very good anchor.
And it brings the Earth's Blessing Animus. So being able to have your caster be no knockdown, no stationary is also quite nice.
All right, what else came through in the CID, Keith? Do you want to talk about the Madrek 1 changes?
Oh, right. And then the massive Madrek 1 changes, which has, in combination with giving champion Sanguine Bond.
And fixing Sanguine Bond.
And fixing Sanguine Bond to allow it to be anywhere where the unit is rather than a 3-inch range, probably results in the reopening of the Meat Mountain archetype, because Madrek 1's new feat is his battle group, or not his battle group, but I think every friendly faction model.
Yep.
Heals D3 plus 3.
Yep. And can't be charged.
Why? And cannot be charged or slammed.
Why D3 plus 3?
To make sure those champions that you Sanguine Bonded all their health away down to 1 each all get to full.
I mean, I understand why they wrote out a list for you to build and play.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he's got Even Ground now, which is his replacement for Surefoot, which I'm not sure that spell's okay. It is such a powerful effect.
I was so shocked to see that spell
make it through.
Yeah. Like, I'm actually not sure. Like, maybe Signs Importance is that powerful, but that spell is absurd.
Yep.
And, yeah, I guess.
And initially I was like, okay, it's fine. He's a Fury 5 caster, right? Fury 5 caster. But they also gave them Arcane Repeater. Like, what?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, the Grocer Squire.
Yep.
Wait, they gave them Arcane Repeater?
Yes, they have Arcane Repeater on their caster attachment now.
On the Stone Scribe or whatever?
Whatever he's called. Yeah. Chronicler or whatever. Yep.
I'm in no way admonishing Keith. This is, but it's more hilarious to me. But I still, occasionally, there's a guy who wrote us on our Facebook group and was like, whoever is the guy with the kid in the background, turn off your mic or whatever.
rebel.
Unlistenable. Anyways, I just saw it literally like 2 days ago and I chuckled like, oh God.
That's the first one of those I've ever seen. I get way more of the, oh, is Aurora on this cast?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was like. Most people like think it's cute. And then, yeah, there's
Well, I mean, I would just point out that you're getting exactly what you paid for this cast. No,
exactly. So, that's like, one of my take on it. Yeah. But yeah, I couldn't even get mad at it. I was like, oh, whatever, that's cute. Like,
yeah. Yep. Was that all the changes in the CID then?
Well, I don't know that we necessarily finished talking about Madrek, but...
I think you need to have a plan for Madrek, because here's what I feel like is going to happen. everybody that owns trolls is going to take him for a spin for at least a little while, and he's going to win a lot of games because if you don't have a plan for Madrak, you just lose. Like you, he's that powerful.
You need to be able to deal, preferably through the course of several different attacks, and not like over a hand, like just a small handful. You need to be able to deal like 35-ish damage to the stat line of 16, 18.
Yep.
Like, otherwise...
Yeah, and you have to do that with a turn of no charging.
Right. Well, also...
They're just only 14 from range.
Yeah, they are. But that's the warders true. Kind of make that sad, too.
Heavy control elements, though, can also help you.
Do they not... they have no way to give them, like, dirge or anything like that for concealment, Keith?
No, they do.
Yeah, so... Mm-hmm. They sure can still be 16 from range, yeah. Depending on what they put in.
Yep.
Because they can. Does the Stone Scribe Chronicler, Scott? You can't answer this question. Keith, does the Stone Scribe Chronicler still grant concealment?
Yeah, he can.
Yeah. So they can be Dev 16.
Yeah.
Hmm. They can. I haven't seen the. We'll see how it shakes out, right? Whether or not the Chronicler gets taken. He hasn't been showing up in a lot of lists I've seen, but that's not to say he doesn't end up in the finalized version.
One variant I have seen is the Glacier King, which grants concealment to things within 3 inches of it. So,
sure, there are going to be some sad troll players when they their hopes are dashed and by the first time they run into Denegra's Ghost Fleet with their shiny new Madrak and still get smashed because melee just doesn't work against Denegra.
Yeah, I don't know. We were talking about that.
If they're in Band of Heroes,
they don't get there. Like, melee does not function against Denegra. I played against Madrak 2 Band of Heroes, and I never, like, there were no melee attacks made against my army.
Hmm.
Yeah, but I feel like Madrak's 1's defensive buffs actually matter. I guess Ghost Fleet ignores concealment, but still, like, Def 14 is not automatic. You have your feet, they become Def 12, then you hit on 8s, so then you have to Crippling Grasp, and then you hit on 6s, right?
Well, they're Def 16, right?
No, not Def 14.
Not against ranged attacks.
Oh, against ranged attacks. Oh, you're trying to shoot the trolls death. Oh.
Right. And then if you have, like, the list I theorized, Keith, I don't know if this has got legs, but I was talking about it with Brent and some of the other guys like Shirley and Carl Jones. And if you had 2 units of warders and 2 units of champions, it doesn't leave you a lot, but those 10 shield guards, and then Madrak's feet, like, resets everything, and then they're all high enough defense where you can only really apply your feet for 1 turn and Crippling Grasps to 1 unit at a time, like, you might be able to deliver that army to Denegra and then start RFP and stuff. That's my theory.
Maybe, but you're going to get shot up and then possibly charged or walked into first, depending on how the feats shake out.
Yeah.
Yep. But against melee, you're in pretty good shape, right? Because you're going to be Def 16, and again, only 1 unit's going to have Crippling Grasps. I don't know. I think it's a game. I want to see that game played. I'm not sure how it turns out. I think if you have 2 units of warders and have 10 shield guards, though, you really diffuse what Ghost Fleet is trying to do in a lot of ways.
I'm still confident in Denegra's ability to carry that game.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I just want to see it. I don't 100% know.
I'll find out this Thursday.
Yeah. I do understand why you would say that, though, Keith, because Denegra is really good at taking the initiative away from melee armies, and that, you know, her feet needs to be changed. So it's just -2 speed. It should not say no charges or orders or special actions.
We'll see if anything or what / if anything happens to Denegra. It seems more and more likely as more and more whining occurs.
Well, I mean, Haley got it, so it's Denegra's turn, I feel like. But yeah.
They're probably coming for Testament next.
Testament, mm-hmm. Nobody plays him, and he had a very low win percentage at the WTC, so it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Testament's barely playable. I mean,
Borka 2 got a little bit of a rework as well. The bear got slightly buffed going to knockdown instead of crit knockdown, which mm-hmm. crit knockdown on a mount was just the dumbest thing to have anyway. He now has Attuned Spirit Northkin, which means in conjunction with Field Marshal Northkin, he can cast any Animus once per turn for free.
Yep.
And then he's got a version of, or a non-upkeepable, it looks like, version of Fog of War that doesn't conceal enemies.
Yep.
Called Snow Shroud. And then Grim 1's feat now doesn't allow charges mm-hmm. or power attacks.
Sea King got fixed.
Oh, yeah, and the Sea King came down 6 points and...
42 to 36, yeah. Yeah.
Ooh.
And then there were some cost adjustments on a few other trolls.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, champions came down in point cost, right?
Yeah. For the max unit, it came down 1 point, which, cool.
They also went up by a power and strength.
Yeah. It's like they're definitely worse than they used to be, so definitely bring
it
down.
It's a little tilting because they're the same cost as Bastions, and you're like, what? Like,
yeah, they're not close.
Yeah, it's just like,
well, they aren't blessed weapon masters.
No, they do have two attacks. They do get plus two defense and base to base with each other. They both have sanguine
immune
bond.
To knockdown.
Yeah,
they're. I mean, that's only with a caster, right? Like, if you're looking,
no, they're immune to knockdown if they're in base to base with each other. That's
are
a part.
They?
Yeah, that's a part of their plus two defense. Okay. So, in addition to Surefoot, they also get it from that. It's like, what? And then if you add douche nozzle, which again, Bastions don't have a UA, but the UA is kind of annoying too because he makes them immune to cold.
Yeah,
which is relevant to me. And then,
yeah, I did enjoy seeing several of the immunity to cold.
Yeah, it's like God damn it,
Berka 2's like whole battle group's immune to cold.
That's like Kador's big like suck at trolls. Has been, you know, I'll just freeze them to death. Maybe. No, not anymore.
It turns out freezing grip's a thing. I've watched you many times freezing grip a unit of champions while you killed the other unit.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just wait on this unit of warders while I cook this one. And then yeah. Literally you just shoot them with Widowmakers and like Kael Balok to death. Like you don't even actually, you just paper cut them to death. It's miserable. But yeah, that I don't really get that strategy anymore.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about it. And
Long Rider's got an armor buff and back to reach.
Yep.
Yeah.
Are they still five boxes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, a little bit of a rip on troll players, but it's like, it's one of those like rough weeks to be PP. I mean, I guess they were probably well received for the most part, but they got reach back, and most troll players are like, "I told you," like you know, like private, you know, everybody told private stupid, and then they had to send it back because they, you know, like I don't know what they, rather than just being happy they got reach back and be like, sweet, they were more like, what were you thinking?
One thing I've learned running our own business, Nigel, is that there's a vocal minority that's not happy with anything you do.
Yeah, yeah. Or it's just mostly like they have to like celebrate how right they were for the whatever year.
Yep.
I would interject that over the course of the CID launch, I've been extremely active in the Trollblood community. I have been for a while. I will say that the response has been overwhelmingly positive and overwhelmingly well received. The biggest thing that I've heard so far, and I agree with it to a certain extent, the biggest thing I've heard so far is just everybody, like we feel like we've got like half of the puzzle and we've got like a really good half of the puzzle and it looks really good and we're loving what we see, but we're all really excited for the other half of that puzzle. Which
they're not
going to
give you like
King
a play
pieces.
Skill or rat. They're not going to like come in and that's the other half of the puzzle.
Well, I mean, I could use one for sure, but failing that, I think like a lot of people are waiting on the other half of that CID cycle to become live.
Which is
I'm certainly
the bears and all that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the Northkin pieces. So it's the ambush bears, the brawler, the ice troll.
That didn't go live at all, huh?
No. Those rules have not been released because to my understanding, it's because the models are not released.
Mm-hmm.
And then once those models become available, which everybody's kind of hoping it's going to happen at War Machine Weekend, or at least some of them, obviously. Coldstone. Oh, praying. Bought a VIP ticket just so I could get the Coldstone. But as soon as those models become available, then I think troll players are going to get a much more comprehensive picture of what's really in front of us at this point.
You can go to Coldstone at like almost any mall in America.
That's true.
I would recommend doing that.
Even at the Mall of America.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're ever in Minneapolis, just go to Coldstone there and get your ice cream fix.
You don't need to go to War Machine Weekend for it with a VIP ticket.
Yeah, that's weird.
In fact, I don't think there's a Coldstone at War Machine Weekend.
No.
It's like a hotel. They don't usually put them in hotels.
The Northkin Elder.
Anyway, it's really interesting to me, Scott, that I would think all of us sort of have some opinions on trolls, but I would have thought, I guess you just haven't had time to like really sit down and think about it, but maybe next week.
Yeah.
Maybe next week.
Yeah, actually, Scott, I think what we should do is I heard through the grapevine that Chad is very excited about trolls. Maybe you and Chad should do a troll so that we don't have to sit through it.
Mm. And then we can fire it out of a cannon into the bottom of the sea so no one has to listen to it.
I do think there's people that are interested.
Well, they probably live on the bottom of the sea.
So, Scott, you can talk about trolls another time, I guess. That's fine. You know, I don't know if stage fright or what. It's no big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Well, John, are you inviting me to talk about Trolls now?
Next time, yes.
Are you inviting me to talk about Trolls now?
No, Scott, I'm not. this bet that keeps on giving.
For the listeners who don't know, and the members of the Troll Blood community who have been banging down my door to do a Trollisode, I want you to understand my silence is not an objection to the current state of Trolls. I made a deal with John. I lost the bet. The bet was I can't talk about Trolls on the next episode.
You sure have lived up to
Troll
that
Troll Dojo. Dojo. I can't talk about it on the next episode, so that is where my silence comes from. I love my troll players. I love all of you guys.
So you're saying
we're going to do a troll episode soon.
If you cared about your troll players and you actually love them, you should have probably put a little more effort in winning the game so you could have talked about it this episode, right?
Or just not bet something so valuable.
Oh, Scott.
What was your other list? Was it Gunbjorn?
Doomy 3.
Oh, Doomy 3. Never mind. You would have been screwed either way.
You're dangerously
close, Scott. You're in a warning track.
All right. So this week we were going to decide.
I want to preface this with I had just had surgery on Thursday. My head was absolutely swimming. Like, I was visibly in a lot of pain. John, even you have to back me up on that. I was visibly in a measurable amount of pain.
I felt bad for you. I was really surprised that you were talking that much shit and decided to raise the stakes.
Do you think this is... probably edit this out. But I feel like this was John McCain talking to Trump after he shot down the Obama repeal. He's like, look, I just had cancer surgery on my face. My head was swimming. And I just didn't even know what we were voting on.
Perfect.
Totally perfect.
Yep.
Okay, so two topics of conversation for this week that people care about. And those two topics of conversation are, John went to a tournament, so he has like a little tourney report.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got Keith, so...
We can do a Metabender...
Metabender Crix.
Mm-hmm. Metabender Crix, and then the tournament report. And then I have a couple questions about the tournament. A, was it a qualifier?
It was not.
Okay. All right, so you're just going there for funsies?
I did, yeah. That's how excited I was about my list pair. I was like, I need to play this before War Machine Weekend, because I actually think... With my current list pair, I could win the LCQ. I'm not going to say that I will, but I could.
All right, John. Well, you want to spend quickly, knock out a little bit of your tournament report, and then we'll get into the Keith Crix breakdown.
Yeah, that's fine. I drove 6 hours to northern Arkansas, and I stayed with Brent, who was kind enough to host me.
It really was Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it was a 6-hour drive I did by myself so I could go play. I played Testament, and then my second list, I played Harby in Faithful Masses. And I took Forge Guard, Idrians, 3 Paladins, well, Vilmon and 2 Paladins, the 2 Kicky Monks, and the Book Choir. And that's most of the list. The list is designed to play into Madrak 1 because full disclosure, Chad touched me so hard with Meat Mountain, like knowing that that's going to come back, and I struggled so much with it. I was like, I have to have an answer in my list pair to play into Madrak 1, otherwise I will be miserable. So that's why I built the list. I'm also hoping the list will be somewhat resilient to Electro Leaps, because that's one of the biggest misses for the Testament list, is Electro Leaps beat it pretty bad. So I've got, if I play well, I can place Armor 21 Paladins at strategic locations as like Lightning Rods to catch Electro Leaps, and then the Forge Guard Armor 18.
Mm.
And then I've got, Rupert's in that list too. So I've got Tough. I can put Tough on the Idrians to kind of help, you know, and then you have Martyrdom. So my goal is between Martyrdom, Armor 18, Armor 21, and Tough to reduce the effectiveness of Electro Leaps to actually be able to play a game into Signar.
Mm-hmm.
So in my head, I think it'll work okay. What I like about that list also is it puts a lot of pressure on Scenario.
Do you have a good way to protect Harby into Signar? That would be my first,
I've got a Guardian and a Crusader, and then I'm dependent on SR 2017 terrain. So I'm hoping that, and a Devout. So my goal is, and you get to place a wall as well. So I can give Harby cover. I can put her behind 2 heavies. That makes her pretty safe. So like even into Haley 3 with the book, the heavies get slammed into her. The slam hurts, but neither one of them gets knocked down. They don't move. They don't go anywhere. So you don't lose to Force Hammer. You can also no spell your jacks.
Sure.
So you have some options to play into some different Signar games.
Okay.
The big reason why it's good into Madrak is Guided Hand is a huge boon.
Madrak has Guided Hand.
He does. Not that that matters.
It doesn't.
Yeah. But I've now played the list into Madrick 1. I've had Bryn also picked up the list, took it to his local game night, played it into Madrick 1. And both games were pretty one-sided. So that list does seem to scoop that matchup pretty good.
You want to explain why?
Well, there's a couple of things going for you. Number one, the Madrick 1 list don't have a high volume of attacks, so Martyrdom inherently has more value. Mm-hmm. You have Awe, so you have things like Def 18, Kicky Monks with Awe are actually Def 20, kind of gumming up the works. They don't have a way to like go around them. So what I was doing was I was pinning champions back with a Kicky Monk and then something like a Paladin to Martyr, and then stabbing them with a Guardian who has reach over the top and not letting the champions get to the Guardian. So I was just like chewing down two champions a turn, every turn. And then she has Rebuke. And so I rebuked the second unit of champions. So it doesn't really do much. And I sent the Forge Guard after the unit that I rebuked, because that way I know I'm going to get the charge with the Forge Guard. And then with three dice to hit Guided Hands, those slams actually hurt champions pretty bad, because a lot of times you'll slam a champion into a champion and get like a five dice charge attack off or whatever.
I mean, that's only at whatever their strength is, pow, six or...
No, no. The smite off their initial attack will be the strength of the weapon. So it'll be a POW 11 weapon master attack with five dice on the champion that gets slammed.
Oh, you're talking about that guy, not the guy that he's
the collateral.
Yeah. I'm just talking about like they hit above their weight class, because Guided Hand number one allows them to hit the champions because they're def 16.
Yeah. I gotcha now.
And then interestingly, here's a really interesting interaction. So a lot of people will put sorcerers in to like handle rebuke. But the way that the timing of it works is you have to declare your order before the sorcerer can remove rebuke. So you don't get the opportunity to charge. So you activate the unit, you cannot give the charge order because of rebuke. Then the sorcerer activates, removes rebuke, and then I can just reapply it. And so you never get a window to actually charge with that unit.
Okay.
So it's good to know how that interaction works, because it's kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so you use Martyrdom, and then, I don't know, Scott, you played the game. You felt pretty okay about it before the game. How did you feel after?
Well, looking at it objectively, there's definitely a lot of things I could have done better. I had a bomber that frenzied for no other reason than my own mistake on a pretty key turn. But even with that being said, even if I go back and I change some of the decisions I made, I don't think it ultimately changes the outcome of the game. You're absolutely right about Martyrdom. Martyrdom is extremely difficult for that list to handle, because that list is kind of centered around the fact that you're not going to get tough checks. So typically, whatever I apply a champion to is going to die, right? Like, they hit hard enough, they're accurate enough, and you don't get tough checks. So you get used to being able to do that, and then not being able to get around Martyrdom probably wouldn't have been that big of an issue, with the exception that Forge Guard are power strength 11 weapon masters in and of themselves, and they're also mat 7. So even with Guided Hand, a boosted 9 is still reasonably reliable to hit. But even when they do hit, they don't necessarily need the charge to cause significant damage. So the troll player kind of gets stuck in this weird realm of like, do I Sanguine Bond out those 5 points, or do I just let him have them now and just ignore the other three over there? Does it get worse for me later? And like, it forces them to start making decisions. And I think the right decision, I think I made the wrong decisions earlier in the game as far as spreading out the damage. And then I think towards the end of the game, I started making the right decisions, but I wasn't making those decisions. I wasn't choosing to let models go or to spread damage out. I wasn't making those decisions out of some kind of newfound enlightenment. I was making those decisions because I was literally just out of options, and I was just trying to save bodies on the table. That being said, I think that Madrick is not – I don't feel like he's an appropriate drop into a list like that that can just consistently apply hitting pressure that is accurate enough to hit and hard enough hitting that will consistently break their armor. He's not going to be obviously the drop into that. I think trolls have some very good other lists that would be very good. Like at War Machine Weekend, I would love to test Grim 2 into that list, because Grim 2 is the other side of my pairing, and I want to see if that list has a matchup there and what that looks like, because I honestly don't know.
We could do that.
But I will say it felt – yeah, I'd love to. And I will say the game was incredibly frustrating. like, and again, I made some bad decisions. Like, there was a part in the game where I threw a bomb because I had engaged a bunch of Idrians, right? So that way they weren't dug in anymore. So I threw a bomb to try and like splash damage out the Idrians, right? Because there's like a series of like four or five of them like in this area. And so the bomb scatters back directly onto one of my sons of Bragg. And I'm like, okay, well, even if it's like in my mind, I'm doing the math. And I'm like, well, even if he scatters back on me, he still has 8 wounds. And of those 8 wounds, I still need a 9 to hurt him. So the only way I kill him is if I roll like a 10 and then an 11, right? So when I scattered back onto him twice, I rolled a 10 and an 11 and then failed my tough check. So in my mind, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, well, this plan is clearly too clever to fail twice. So I went ahead and tried it. Like, there was some silly stuff like that, but I don't think it changes that matchup. But I did learn playing that list Saturday. I did learn that the bad matchups for that list are very tough matchups. Like, it feels very binary. When it feels like when Madrak 1 has a really rough matchup, it's going to feel and go south in a hurry. I don't think he's going to have a lot of even pitched games.
I think he just has a gear check. And the gear level is high. It's like eye level, you know, astronomical to be able to deal with that list. But so that was my list pair. I learned a lot. I got to play the Testament Mirror. That was interesting. I learned a lot about that game. That game turns into a game of efficiency because you both are like killing each other's stuff. And I think I talked about that in the pre-ramble, right?
Well, I didn't record that. So.
You didn't record that? Yeah. So round 4, I got matched up with Testament. And I had like a lot of people walk by the table that just basically sneered and said, good, you guys deserve each other. Because apparently we'd both been giving people the Testament experience all day. So that was kind of funny. But so we played the game, and I ended up winning the game on scenario. And I think two things were really in my favor. One, I had 2 units of errands. So I have more bow shots than he did. And in lieu of the second unit of errants, just because he didn't own them, he had Gravis, Elias, the new errant UA, or not UA, the solo, and another solo. I think it was a Knight's Exemplar Seneschal, which is a lot of hitting power and a lot of power. But in that matchup, you need to kill a lot of bodies. So having 10 extra bow or 11 extra bow shots was a pretty big deal. And what I sort of realized while I was playing the game, there's a couple of things I did that really helped me sort of turn the tide. Number one, Ashenvale is a big deal. -2 to hit affects a lot of how much damage you do. So I was loading up my jacks every turn and killing as many of his Ashenveiled errants as I could before I activated the rest of my stuff so that the -2 debuff wouldn't be applied to the rest of my army because it doesn't apply to the jacks. And then the other benefit you get from that is it's 1 focus to make an attack with a jack. It is 2 focus to raise dead a model. So every time I spend a focus and I hit and kill a model, I'm gaining a focus efficiency on my opponent. And my opponent, who was Richard, played great, but he didn't load his jacks up. He was reviving more guys. So I think that was those two things allowed me to get way ahead on attrition eventually and sort of cascade to a victory.
So you had Scott and him. Who was your other win?
My other win was against Assyria. And the guy had, I think he felt pretty good because he feeded with Assyria, had 2 units of Mage Hunter Strike Force, blew up, I don't know, like he had an unpainted unit of, this is Brady, he had an unpainted unit of Mage Hunter Strike Force and a painted unit of Mage Hunter Strike Force. The unpainted unit, literally, I kid you not, killed a model on Assyria's feet turn. And I'm like, that's pretty good. And then I killed like, I don't know, 4 of them. So there was like 7 of them left or something on the next turn. Mm. And then they proceeded needing 8s to kill my guys, killed 7 more. Like they were just like all-stars.
Yeah.
So he was just like killing lots of my models and I'm like having trouble getting across the table to him, but I'm putting tremendous scenario pressure on him because it's Testament and I'm just reviving guys. And at the end of the game, he's like, I killed 40 guys and there's like 9 dead. Like, this is so frustrating. He's like, this is basically Ghost Fleet. And I'm like, yeah, it's the protected version of Ghost Fleet. And I'm sorry. I feel bad for giving you that experience. He's like, I literally don't think there's anything I can do. Like, I literally have to play Ossian because I can play. He's like, I've played this into Ghost Fleet. I can play this Assyria list into Ghost Fleet fine because it threatens Denny. It, puts off enough shots that he kind of gets ahead of the game and he feels good about it. He's like, but I literally can't do anything about all these weapon masters because Jack's just all died. And then I played round 1. I played against Virus 1, and I actually lost that game. He's playing – actually really, really liked his list. He had 6 Griffins, Nis Hunters, a unit of Nis, and Virus, and then Imperatus. and he put Hollowed Avenger on Imperatus. So Hollowed Avenger, like, you kill all of his jacks are shield guards, right? So, like, if you try to, I almost fell into the trap. I'm like, well, I'm gonna like, kill me some Nis, right? But if I'd killed the Nis, then he lets one Nis get killed, shield guards the rest, and then Imperatus walks 3 inches, right? And then Imperatus is speed 6, so with mobility, he's speed 8 reach. So he's got 11 inches after his 3 inch, so 14 inches, and then 2 sidesteps. So he gets up to, like, a 20-inch threat. Which is it's like literally Moloch Karn. And then my opponent says to me, yeah, I used to play Scorn. I'm like, yeah, okay, now I understand where, like, your list design impetus came from.
Mm-hmm.
But having a 20-inch threatening Imperatus is scary. And so, like, I'm playing and I measure out all his threat range and I look down and see an upkeep and I'm like, what's the upkeep on Imperatus? And I figured it would be, Inviolable Resolve. And he's like, no, it's, Hollowed Avenger. And I'm like, ugh. So, like, literally, if I kill a model, Testament dies right there because I'd already walked up Testament into Imperatus' threat range.
Yeah.
But so I kill 6 Griffins on my feet turn because he kind of, like, jams me up, kills a few guys. I bring him back. I bring back all the guys. I have no guys dead. I kill 6 Griffins. And he literally has his only out is to kill me. And so I put my 2 jacks in front of Testament thinking, yeah, he can trample over all my weapon masters, take a few free strikes, but it's Imperatus, so he doesn't care. So it doesn't matter how much damage he takes. He ends his movement, Phoenix Protocols, and then can kill me, but I'm like, I'm blocking line of sight with my 2 medium base jacks, so he can trample up to them. He's got real no angle that he can get line of sight to me, so then he'll have to kill a jack, and he'll never have enough focus to kill a jack and get me, but I forgot about Bird's Eye. So he tramples up to the jacks and then just reaches over the top of my jack and bonks Testament on the head, and it was on Viros' feet turn, and so he ran Eris through 3 choir. I knew Eris was a problem, and I didn't have, like, much that I could get to her, so I engaged, like, I didn't use my choir. I ran them and engaged her with 3 choir. And so, like, it's not great odds. Like, you need 10s to hit on the choir free strikes, but if you get 3 cracks at it, it's actually not a terrible.
Yeah.
And I actually hit one, then I needed an 11 to kill her, but I didn't get it. But she was able to run and engage me to get flank. So, impaired. Yeah.
11 to kill her? What's the power on a?
6 on a choir.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yep. Yep. No, it's
Mat 4, POW 6.
Yeah, that's
nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I mean, it was one of those things where I was sort of playing out my turn, and I'm like, oh well, I need to do something about Eris, and I figured it would at least make him think about walking her out of combat.
Sure.
Or he has like no attacks. If he ends up spending attacks killing choir, I'm also happy,
right?
Because I get souls for it, and I didn't really need bonus damage or no, you know, whatever. But that was a valuable lesson. I'm like, yeah, because as soon as he's like, well, you haven't left me any outs, so I'm going to try and trample and kill you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, Bird's Eye, because I had forgot about it. I literally forgot that Virus 1 had Bird's Eye.
Even though you played that list for a while.
I know. It's really stupid. It's just one of those things you don't think about in the heat of the moment when you haven't played for a while. So.
No, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got there, and he needed 5s to hit because of flank. And he hit one and knocked me down to, like, I think he did 12 damage. So I was down to 6. And I'm like, well, surely he can miss 2 fives in a row. He rolls a 4 on 2 dice, and I'm like, oh, maybe God does love me. And then he rolls like an 11 and splatters me all over the all over the pavement. And I'm like, good game. So that was cool. But yeah, so I started 0-1 and then won my next 3 games. But submarine my way into respectability, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Did you have a good time?
I had an awesome time. Those guys were amazing. Shout out to T-Shirt Explosion, which is a store in what's the name of the town? I don't know. Somewhere in northern Arkansas.
Springdale,
Arkansas. That's right. The crew was great. It's the standard crew that sort of, you know, like Brandon Squirrely was there. Carl Jones, Brent Simon, Gonzo was there, Scott. Mm-hmm. Some guys I hadn't met from Carl's store before that were pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was good. It reminded me
I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say it reminded me how much I enjoy small events, because you play 4 rounds, you hang out with great people all day, you have a blast, you get good testing with your lists, you get to play good games, and so I'm going to make an effort this year, since I seem to be having more time on my hands coming up, to go to more localized events and spend some time playing some War Machine this year.
Nice.
I was going to offer that we had a listener look me up and strike up a conversation with me. He was surprised that I was in Missouri and that Brent was in Arkansas, and so Giorgio and his wife drove down, because his wife is new to Signar and he's playing Rhett. So they drove like 3.5 hours to 4 hours to go to this tournament. just so they could meet Brent, me, John, and play games and stuff and have a good time. So it was really cool to see Giorgio come out. That was awesome.
He also had the best dog ever.
That dog was sweet.
Yep. And Giorgio was super kind, too, because they brought breakfast for everyone. They, like, brought bacon and eggs. It was very kind.
Yeah, that's super awesome.
Anybody took him up on it, because it's a bit like, I don't know, people just were, like, being weird about it. But I was like, oh, that was really awesome.
Yeah.
We had just came from Cracker Barrel and stuffed ourselves, which was unfortunate. But, yeah, Giorgio was cool. His wife was super nice. Yeah, that was cool. Brian runs a good outfit, and I managed to pick up some no-quarter primes, so I was happy for that.
Nice.
Sorry if I bored you guys. That was a lot of me talking.
It's all good. That's what a battle report is.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Testament is not really a fair caster.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In a weird way, if we're doing the metabenders, we can kind of roll some Testament tech. We should have a sidebar for Testament.
Yeah.
Like, this is how you beat Ghost Fleet. You're slide into Testament crap. Yeah.
It turns out you almost need to bring RFP.
Happily, there's way more living RFP in the game than there is undead RFP. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, Keith, do you want to give us a general breakdown on how the current Crix pair works and why it's so effective, if you're still there?
I literally bored
him to death. I guess I was muted. I interjected a couple of times. I was like, oh, no one responded. Weird.
sorry, Keith.
Yeah.
No, that was all right. It was my own fault, obviously. So I can talk about the Crix pairing as of, like, previously. Right now it's in a state of flux, but I think it's going to shake out to be somewhat similar. Some of the things I've been hearing about potential pairings I strongly disagree with, and I can talk about that too.
Yeah.
But so Crix has really two, currently maybe three, proven powerful list archetypes. There's Ghost Fleet run by, you can pick one of like three or four casters to run it. Most commonly is Denegra 1 because she brings all of the ability to turn low mat rat pirates into high mat rat, high damage output monsters, as well as scenario presence, et cetera, et cetera. Denegra is incredible. We've been over that before. And then the Ghost Fleet archetype brings to bear two serious problems with it. One is a large number of incorporeal models. It's got usually the battle engine, usually 6 to 10 Blackbane's Ghost Raiders, and two incorporeal solos in the Hellslinger Phantom and the Pistol Wraith. So it brings a lot of gunpowder and melee power that is incorporeal. So you have to be able to answer incorporeal. It also has mega strong recursion, which in that each of the three units of Revenant Crew of the Etrementos will resurrect D3 plus one members a turn. So possibly up to 12 models recurred every turn, average 9 models recurred every turn. So you've got recursion problems to deal with, incorporeal problems to deal with, and then Denegra's very strong scenario game to deal with. That is considered right now to be Crix's most powerful list.
Can I just interject something really quick too? Denegra also brings an incredible assassination to the to bear
so
with that.
In those units, there's between usually 8 or 9 riflemen, which have a speed 6, range 14 gun. So they're a 20-inch threat range on top of like the 16-inch threat range on the pistol wraiths. And then Denegra has running arc nodes that with Scourge and Parasite gets a really reliable ranged assassination.
And her feet.
That is also true.
Yeah. All right, go ahead, Keith. Sorry, I interrupted.
Paired with it is usually right now a Dark Host list, which is a Bane-centric theme, which specializes in shooting denial and high armor on its troopers, usually running between 5 and 10 Bane Cavalry, which under the Wraith Engine's aura will be armor 20, plus usually some access to stealth, in addition to the fact that all Banes in that theme gain prowl, and it places 2 clouds that they can prowl in. So it's going to be stealth, shooting denial, powerful melee attacks, and high armor on their against ranged and magic if you can defeat the stealth / LOS defenses. This list is most commonly run currently by the Gwitch Coven. Their feat makes delivering it pretty trivially easy. Special mention would go to like Gorshade 3, who resurrects a lot of Bane Cavalry to good effect. And Scar 1, who runs a different version of it, usually with two Wraith engines.
For, yeah, mix armor spam.
Yeah, that it's incorporeal armor spam then.
Yep.
So why this is challenging is because the two lists require radically different approaches to deal with them, and finding one list that can do both is very unlikely, and thus makes your best case scenario against Kricks oftentimes a list chicken. Because what you want for Ghost Fleet, either an easy to apply, preferably long ranged RFP. Because if you can RFP the leader models of the Revenant units, they can no longer recur. Or you can just brute force RFP every model that you're, or the models that you're killing, and then obviously they can't come back. Or if you can't bring to bear easy recursion, and this has to be recursion that can't get like alpha'd out. Because some, it's like, I'm going to bring Ragman, and he'll just cast Bone Shaker and get him. No, he's going to get killed long before he gets to do any of that. Denegra knows, like, the Kricks player knows what you're trying to do, and will try to stop you. And Denegra can assassinate a solo, or a couple of solos, or your Arc Node, just as easy as she can your caster sometimes. If you can't bring the RFP to play, which a lot of factions can't, Signar just literally doesn't have it. No matter what, they don't have it. I guess there's Siege, but it doesn't work. turns out Siege gets killed.
Classic, spoiler alert. Classic Keith grumping on Siege.
Yep.
If you can't RFP, then the other way to do it is just to bring a massive volume of ranged attacks to kill enough pirates to keep the recursion to a manageable level. It's like you kill most of a unit, they bring a couple guys back, those couple guys try to get back to the fight, you kill them before it gets bad. You just keep killing all of the pirates, and you can win on scenario if you can do that. The problem is, so that's the more accessible of the two solutions. You just bring the magic weapons and a bunch of guns, and you can fight Ghost Fleet pretty easily. It's not actually that hard. But where you run into trouble then is you've now put yourself into a great position to get trounced by Dark Host. Because like the Coven will just be like, oh, you brought a bunch of POW 10 guns that are magical to deal with these pirates and various solos that I've got in my Ghost Fleet list. All right, I pop Coven's feet and run a bunch of Armor 20 Bane Cav at you. And you're like, I lose. And there's a new list out now that's the Black Industries, which is the Kricks players bring their heavies, and their heavies get Carapace, and it does basically the same thing. It's like, I brought a bunch of infantry guns to kill infantry for the Ghost Fleet matchup. It's like, okay, I run a bunch of Arm 21 heavies at you. And you're like, I lose. So dealing with the Kricks matchup is this multi-pronged problem of you want to bring guns, but you're punished for bringing guns, but you need, and or you need this RFP, and you also have to be able to fight like these Armor 18 Cav in melee, and it's a lot of questions to answer all at the same time. If you're trying to catch Kricks in one net, which a lot of times you can catch a faction in one net without too much problems. Like my answer for Trollbloods is pretty much always the same, regardless of their list pair. Like I have something that's decent against the higher armor type of stuff, and it's usually fine into Trollbloods. So Kricks is kind of confounding that expectation right now by being able to run really disparate list styles.
They also have... They also all ask hard scenario questions of you so that you don't have time. You don't have time to, like, play a long game. You can't back up against Coven and sort of deny them their feet by backing out of charge ranges and just, like, seeding a couple scenario points like you could in some of the easy earlier scenarios. It's way too light.
If Coven's going first, this is a mistake I've seen some people make. If they're going first, they shouldn't feed on turn one. I've occasionally seen it happen, and it's always wrong. They should feed. Sometimes even if they're going second, they shouldn't feed on turn one. They should feed, but it sometimes is fine when you're going second. You feed when you put your models in threat range of the relevant scenario pieces and can score the following turn.
Yep.
Yeah, that's how it's done. It sucks.
So I guess the real question then becomes, once we understand how the matchup works, right? I know I've gotten an opportunity to play against that list pair several times now, as I'm sure most people have. What are the things, Keith, that you don't want to see your opponent do that are just really hard on you? Like, are there any things that the average player can do that just Ghost Fleet doesn't want to see it, and it's not particularly good against Dark Host. And so it's small things that they can do to gain some kind of incremental advantage in the matchup.
Play-wise, I haven't run across any like really cool tricks on the table that bamboozle Cricks. You've got to have your list build. So you have to start with that list of problems and either accept list chicken by building two different lists to beat each of the Cricks archetypes and try to catch the rest of the field in the process, or get really creative and find a solution in one list, which I know currently Signar's got it like locked in. I'm not sure about other factions as much. I haven't given it a lot of thought for a lot of other factions. Retribution does have it in Ossian. He can, in a Defenders of Ios theme, he can pretty easily beat both, because Bane Cavalry are not that hard to kill in melee, and like Halberdiers do it just fine.
I will say, kind of to Scott's point, sorry, Keith, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'd say one thing that I've been thinking about when building lists to go into this particular list pair, because Mercs obviously don't have the RFP, so I feel like 9 times out of 10, I'm going to get Ghost Fleet dropped into me. So that's really what I think that's probably like the basic check for a Cricks player, is to look like, are they playing RFP? They're not? Okay, Ghost Fleet. And correct me if I'm wrong about that, Keith, but I think that's
pretty standard. Yeah.
So I'm trying to build towards Ghost Fleet, cause I think that's what I'll see more frequently. But, an element that I'm trying to include in every list is a reasonable, level of pressure on the caster, exerting some amount of, certainly, you know, like there's no such thing as a guaranteed like assassination list if you come up, you know, so far or whatever, but at least not in Mercs. But if you can exert pressure on Denegra, and to a lesser extent the Witch Coven, not only do you always kind of have a game regardless of how things are going, but it also will make them play differently with their caster. When Denegra can't just charge straightforward on turn one and turn two and feed all over the entire world or whatever, like, it changes how the game is played, changes how the game is played around scenario zones. When the Witch Coven, when the Witch Coven can't be forward for fear of, you know, at least losing one witch, which is a pretty big blow, you know, so they have their feet turn, but if you're able to kick through the feet turn and then have pieces that can threaten to kill witches from an extreme range away and ignore potentially stealth or whatnot, that changes their game plan too.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Denegra, in a vast majority of my games, when I'm going first, I run Denegra 14 inches forward, and then on the next turn, I'll advance another 3-4 inches in feet, is oftentimes like how my turn one, turn two works out with Denegra, if I feed on turn two. Sometimes I don't have to, and I get to back up a little bit and cast some spells, and then on turn three, I come back forward and feet. But I'm usually feeding across the center line. And if you can stop her from doing that, then you're going to be in good shape. If you can limit the withering to just like what she can get safely, it's also beneficial. This is a sort of a general tip against Denegra. Like Denegra 2 used to be, like Haley 2 used to be, the wider you can spread your army, the better. And that's something that scenario play tends to reward these days. Denegra doesn't play any ambushers, so you're not going to get punished that way. You can use all 48 inches wide. And that way you're always going to have elements of your list that are outside of her feet, because her control range isn't that big. The danger then is you can't be so dispersed that you can't bring power to a point if you need to. For example, if she collapses entirely into one scenario zone and threatens to play for the win, you still have to be able to contest to enough that she can't do that. So.
I know that
the coven is harder to threaten, because oftentimes they have no particular reason to move forward. Like, the coven is going to be at the back of the kill box at all times, unless they're scoring literally to win.
Right.
Like, unless they are moving 2 scenario points to win the game, they're going to hang at the back of the kill box, like in cover or behind forests and stuff. And threatening the ball with any amount of focus camp is nearly impossible.
The ball is immortal. We should probably explain that. But
so there's a particular the way focus overboosting the power field works is that anytime a warcaster takes damage, they can spend a focus to negate five of that damage. The way the ball works is when the ball takes damage, it assigns damage to the witches. The witches are all three warcasters individually. They are not one entity by it in any rules sense. So if the ball were to take exactly 15 damage, it can assign five to each of the witches, and they can spend one of the focus from the egregore to negate all 15 damage. So it's fair to say, because you can't really reliably do more than 15 damage to an armor 17 target, that focus on the egregore is simply health on the witches. It is like undamageable, it's just replenishing health that you can't do any damage to the witches until you get through all of it. So on a full camp, the witches are going through the ball. The witches are 13, 17 with 60, or it's like 72 health. It's 24, 9, 5, 45. No, just 69 health.
I'm a little more interested in... So you're right. Like, the ball is essentially unkillable if the Coven player decides that that's the goal, is to make the ball unkillable, right? But there are plenty of games that I've seen where the Coven player is, like, trying to blind that battle engine or trying to do this or that and throwing out. So looking for or playing a list that, one, is capable of maybe punching through a three camp on the ball, like that in and of itself is somewhat valuable, I think.
Absolutely.
So while you should never be like, I'm probably going to assassinate the witches, no, you're probably not. But having a list that can threaten them if they get too engaged, throwing Stygian Abysses or whatever the case may be, that can be, again, you're probably not going to assassinate either Denegra or the Witch Coven, even if you build the elements into your list, but it does change how involved those casters get. And that can be an incremental advantage to playing the game.
Or at least make you less disadvantaged.
Right.
Which is how I would look at it, because it's... If Denegra gets to play in the Sprinkler and do Keith's plan, if she has the ability to just run 14 forward and then just...
walk to where she wants and feet, yeah, you're done. That's it. That's the game.
Well, it's... it's significantly tougher.
I feel like if you get feeded on top of two across the center line, I don't know how you're not losing 5-0 on control.
Yeah. I mean, it could definitely happen. I guess I could just talk about, like, how I ended up on Testament as my Krixdrop. Because I did a lot of thinking and a lot of looking through War Room. And the first thing I did was went through every instance of RFP available in Protectorate. I'm like, what do we have that has RFP as a tool? And specifically, I really wanted deep reaching RFP, because you really only need to RFP the leader model of the Revenant crew units. And because the leader model, in order for them to be relevant, he'll be in the back, but he can't be like completely out of the game and unreachable. So a spell that you can arc, like Dust to Dust, is a very good tool for that, because, you know, arc nodes run 10 and you have another 10 inches. That's 20 inches. It's pretty hard to get out of range of that and still keep your pirates to be relevant. and so, you know, I just, like I said, I went through every instance of RFP. I figured out how I would apply it in the game. And if there was a way to apply it and get the unit leaders at the minimum, or massive amounts of RFP would also work, but we don't really have a lot of that in Protectorate. The only really large source of RFP is Silence of Death, or maybe Resnik 2's feet, which RFPs. After I found RFP, I was like, okay, well then this list starts to build itself. I'm going to put two arc nodes in the list so I have redundancy, and so I can go get basically all the unit leaders, because that changes the Ghost Fleet matchup. And then it becomes what does the rest of the list look like? And I just decided that Exemplars really bring every tool you need, because the Errants all have bows, magical bows, which is a great answer to incorporeal Blackbanes. And then the Knights all have magic weapons and hit like a ton of bricks, so they're a very fine answer to Wraith Engines. So the list actually gives you a lot of tools. And after I found Testament, I started thinking about the matchup, and I'm like, you know what? This is good into Dark Host too, because all these guys are weapon masters and hit hard. So it's not like we mix it up with Coven, and sure, we have a turn where we don't do very much because of the feat, but we really don't care, because the Coven's not going to RFP, and we're going to just put guys back until we get to make meaningful attacks. and then their army is going to evaporate pretty fast, which is how that actually plays out. Because both the Ghost Fleet list and the Dark Host list, most of them don't have much access to RFP. Testament gets to play a unique game where he can kind of do the Crix plan, which is throw my guys away until I get to make meaningful attacks, which is after Coven's feet turn or after Danny's feet turn, and that's fine. Like, I lose a bunch of stuff, but I put enough of it back where, and then my stuff hits so much more effectively without debuffs, just because it's all Mat 7, Rat 6, Weapon Masters, like, all the Crix stuff just evaporates when you get a hold of it, and it's just a matter of time. And then you also get the benefit of not losing on scenario, because when you put guys back, you're literally, like, putting them back in the back arcs of things and, you know, denying charges and putting them back deep and just making it, like, really difficult for them to dig you out, because they sort of dig you out and push you back, but then you walk forward and then put a bunch of stuff back, and you're just all over in their business. So I actually think Testament is one of the few lists that plays into both current Crix drops pretty well. And I welcome Dark Industries. If they want to run jacks at me, that's fine, too. That's not going to bother me a bit. So the Styxis theme might be bad because they have RFP. But
So on the discussion of list building then, because John brought up some really interesting points, like he has like that layer of flexibility between or just built into his Testament and Menoth list. Like, he has the recursive ability, but he also has the flexibility of being able to hit hard and accurately and get a volume of attacks. Which is what's letting him be able to play into that matchup with good success, right, John? Essentially?
Yep.
So, Keith, the recursion, what do you think would
that keeps it in play against Ghost Fleet? Like, there's not enough. Like, that list doesn't have the kind of volume of attacks it would take to beat Ghost Fleet without the recursion, but it has it, so it's fine.
Right. It's a combination of both. I don't mean to. What I don't want to do is say it's because of this factor or that factor. It's because of these factors combined, right?
Yep.
So, Keith. Obviously, not every faction can do that. So what are things that you think are relevant to, like, what's the right way to phrase this? What are the top, say, two things that you would say you must consider when building your list to handle this list pair? Like, what are two things that you think people either sometimes don't necessarily get right, or they don't see or notice? Or what are a couple of things that you feel like are very good things that you should almost always have in your list that are going to help you regardless of whether you end up getting the Ghost Fleet drop or whether or not you end up getting the Dark Host drop? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I can talk. There's a couple things. I mean, part of the problem is how specific the answers have to be. Like, that's a major part of the problem, is that there's no great general answer. Like, I can't give some fine advice and be like, well, if you just put these sorts of things and play kind of like this, you'll probably be okay, because that's proven not to be the case.
Keith, can I?
Sure, sure. And I'm not... I'm not trying to, like, box you into a corner with that line of questioning either, because I know that you, obviously, without going super in-depth into every faction, there's no way you can give, you know, a truly meaningful answer on a faction-to-faction basis without doing that. So I'm not trying to trap you into a corner with that. I just to kind of pick your brain is to go, like, what are some things that we, as the non-Crix playing populace, might be able to do better when we're looking at list construction or list design or things like that?
Just
for a very basic baseline, and this is going to be something that comes up more as Grimkin becomes more popular, if it becomes more popular, is that you have to be able to kill an incorporeal solo. Like, if you can't stop them from contesting for free, then the scenario game that was going to be hard anyway becomes impossible. Because some of the only way that you can stay in the game against Denegra in particular is by not giving away too much. And if you can't stop her from contesting and thus be able to score at least the elements on your side of the board, you are forced to give her more. Like, you have to run stuff at her zones to stop her from scoring, because she's stopping you from scoring. So you have to at least be able to kill the incorporeal stuff that's run at you, which is there's a base amount of magic attacks that you have to have to make that doable.
Keith,
accurate, reasonably powered magic attacks. You also have to be able to kill Blackbane himself before he starts the zombie apocalypse. Nigel can attest to that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't let Blackbane just start converting entire units of Winter Guard to the cause.
I was going to just corollary what you're saying, Keith. You know, a lot of times, you're like, they play incorporeal models. You're like, cool, I brought a bunch of magic weapons, so I'm good to go. But if your magic weapons are, say, Erin crossbows, that doesn't stop the Wraith engine. Like, it might get, it's the existence of the incorporeal Wraith engine, particularly in that list, kind of serves to you know, further delineate the fact that, like, you can kind of have, like, I need magic weapons because there's incorporeal stuff, so I've got to be able to stop them from contesting. But it's more than that, right? Like, there's some depth to the answers that you have to have. That was the first couple lists that I built. It was just like, Ayana and Holt go in here, and then I was like, oh, I don't have anything powerful enough for her to, like, charge up to really, really threaten the Wraith Engine, unless it's a Jack, and, you know, it's pretty easy for Denegra to make sure a Jack doesn't get to the Wraith Engine, so.
And sometimes that's okay. Like, the Wraith Engine, like all the battle engines, is designed to be independent and powerful. And the Wraith Engine does not have anywhere the kind of output that any of the other battle engines does. It does not kill models like a Stormstrider. It does not even kill models like the dwarf thing. And so the Wraith Engine's thing is that it just hangs around being annoying. And sometimes you have to let it. And if it comes and contests your zone, it would be nice if you could have, like, if it runs at you, it would be nice if you could have an answer for that. And most factions do. Like, Legion has Wraithbane, so they just Wraithbane a heavy and charge it at the Wraith Engine, problem solved. Wraithbane's in a couple other factions. Ayana can do the same thing to a Dwarf Heavy. So as long as you have the tool to deal with the Wraith Engine that ran at you, that's pretty okay. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, I have played against Krix with my Signar and just waited and just let the Wraith Engine be and basically waited for it to decide to make attacks and then killed it. Because it's like, basically if you can deal with the problem of its plus armor aura, like if that's not bothering you too much, then the long-term implications of the Wraith Engine will probably not be that bad.
Fair enough.
Although it does put you in that situation where they're contesting. So if you're against Denegra. So, I mean,
which is why I say if it comes to contest your zone, it's nice to be able to have an answer for that. But right. If it's hanging out in Denegra's army, like, you don't have to be able to kill it from ranged. It's pretty unreasonable to be able to expect it to kill it from ranged. It's 12-20 with 26 boxes and incorporeal. Like, that's a pretty tall order. Basically, only Protectorate can do that.
Yep.
I guess there's some troll lists that could as well.
There's some Kador that could do it.
We could.
Yeah, if you Jack Marshall the Behemoth, it almost does it by itself.
Yeah, you can give it weapons. Sure. We could maybe pivot a little bit and talk about some faction specific pieces that play well into Krix, I guess.
Well, I was going to just real quick also, like, kind of piggyback on what John was saying. So he's like, he had a hard removal. He had a hard RFP for individual targets, which was enough to, like, that was his buy-in. And then he's got recursion and volume of attack. So he has kind of like this tier strategy. Those things all happen to pair well into both things because he's got weapon master, so they do high armor, and then they do regular troops just fine. And then he's got the strategic. But other factions might not have the RFP, so they have to lean on, like, with Kador, maybe the strategy is to hard counter stealth, and then that way both the Coven and Denegra are a little bit more in check if you can.
Yeah, then all you have to do is, like, weather Coven's feet turn, and then even a stealthy army you can shoot to death. That's probably fine. You have a game at that point, I would say.
Yep. So, like, other people might want to hard counter something else if they can't get the RFP that specific.
I think from a Kador perspective, I was just thinking, I don't know why, I'm like, Sorcial One might be a good answer into both of those lists because you can counterfeit and basically take away their momentum.
Well,
you can't counterfeit the Coven.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, well,
5-inch control radius when you pop here. It's like, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, Coven's just tilting. There's not much to do about it. You do have some play in the Coven, but yeah, I think Gabba Reinholt by himself is kind of scary. Like, he's a prospect.
I actually think that as long as you have guns in your anti-Krix list, like reasonably accurate guns, potentially powerful, you should almost without question have Reinholt as your attachment if you can take him.
Yeah.
So that brings me to a question, Nigel. Do you think maybe the new Greylord theme with a lot of Doomreavers might be a decent answer?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Can they survive?
They can't survive the shooting. Like, she just kills them on her feet turn. Like,
well, what if you play with, remember, like, Old Witch?
Remember what always beat Doomreavers in Mark
II? Yeah. Gunlines.
Denny Pirates. Yeah. And that's exactly what Ghost Fleet is.
But I was just thinking, like, you know, maybe with Old Witch 2 and the -5 to range spell would help.
Maybe that. One of the problems with Ghost Fleet is that they can bring them back pretty prodigiously. Like, they can, like, bring them back way forward and just shoot you that way. Like,
yep.
They can really get around that 5-inch minus 5-inch range in a lot of weird ways, especially when they're bringing back the like long gunner dudes. The
I think Doom Raiders need a CID anyway, because I just realized that they're 13 points for the six guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I don't think that's a good strategy.
Knights Exemplar, what, 8? Yeah.
9.
9, yeah.
But like, Knights Exemplar might be undercosted.
Yeah, I was thinking like Irusk 2 with them, so they're tough, no knockdown, and maybe. But it's like, yeah. I don't, you know. I honestly think Jaws of the Wolf is probably where I'd go.
I was just thinking like ready access to lots of magic weapons. You also, in that theme, get your cav, so you can like, if you clear a bunch of stuff, you can go hunting for unit leaders with those guys. They can get there.
The tough part about cav is in the Dark Host, because you kind of need it to be slightly good against Dark Host too. And the cav are interesting against Dark Host, because they do get around the +2 armor buff from the stupid douche engine, but they like, I don't think they hit hard enough anyways.
No, that's why you need the Doom Reavers, because yeah. I also think the Doom Reavers are power 12 weapon masters, so they're great into Dark Host. Mm. I don't know. I was just, it's a thought exercise. I don't know if it's good, but it's at least avenues to explore
and
then figure out the caster that goes in there.
Well, like when we were talking, I was like, Eros 2 with that theme, because I had the magic attacks, and I was like, immediately started thinking about like, no. But then I thought Eros 2 and Jaws of the Wolf, because you can Jack Marshall the Behemoth under Eternian, the Colden Lord. And then you could even Jack Marshall like a second destroyer under another Colden Lord and put fire for effect. So the two are fueling a behemoth, and you also have another one. Like, if you want to go totally nuts, I don't think I'd go that far. But then just Chiazzi Assassins with tough no knockdown might be problematic enough, even with debuffs. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, the stealth is good.
Because there's stealth and they're...
Yeah, so I played Ashlyn with Chiazzi Assassins into... Uh-huh. I guess that was actually Coven, wasn't it, Keith, that we played that matchup? It wasn't.
Which one?
When I played Ashlyn with the Assassins... I guess that was Coven. That wasn't Ghost Fleet, so that's not an exact...
But you have to answer both.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Yeah.
But Eros does something different than Ashlyn, because he's tough no knockdown and then battle-lusting them. So they're
I was playing with CID Ashlyn when she had heightened reflexes, so they were tough no knockdown.
Oh, okay.
And battle-lusted is relatively irrelevant. Like, they hit hard enough to kill every Bane in melee.
Yeah. I'd rather they be battle-lusted.
I mean, that's fine. Battle-lusted, make sure, but I don't think that's the thing that's tipping the scale there in that matchup. Like, and then she had the ability of her feet defensively to protect them for a turn.
Hmm.
But the problem is dropping when they drop assassins from 14 to 13, that was actually a pretty big defense-wise.
Yeah.
It's actually like a pretty big debuff to them coming into Mark III. I think it was maybe a mistake because I'm not sure that they're good enough to see play at...
Especially with the Iron Flesh change? Yeah.
Well, the Iron Flesh change. But here's the other thing, is that you know what's really good at killing high defense infantry? Hmm. Cavalry.
Yeah.
So, guess what?
Yeah.
Dark Ghost plays, right?
That's true.
So, I mean...
Mad 8 impact attacks followed by Mad 8 boosted charge attacks do pretty good work.
I mean, tough no knockdown helps.
Yeah, I'd be asking a lot of tough no knockdown.
But, like, even with Ashlyn's feet, boosted attacks... cut through Ashlyn's feet, you know, mm-hmm. like not as well as they will against, say, Irisk, but mm-hmm. yeah, it's just, I don't think Chiazzi Assassins are an answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth testing past the once, you know.
I do think having a very strong defensive feat is potentially a way to play.
Oh yeah, that's Irisk 2's other thing.
No, for sure. So I think that might be a place to start. I'm just not sure Assassins are the right answer, but yeah. That was like, so one of the things I've been looking at as I build. I'm currently playing an Ostrom list, but I think the Ostrom list I play is okay in the Ghost Fleet. Like, you know, like I feel like maybe I have like a somewhere in the 40 percentile range, like in the matchup, something like that. Mm. Like I'm playing probably at a 8 to 10% disadvantage just to throw random numbers out of my head.
Most statistics are made up on the spot.
Exactly. So. But I also think that the list, because it's made up of like a ton of ARM-18 light jacks and a battle engine and a couple of heavies, is probably straight dead into into Bane Cav.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his feet helps, which is part of the reason I'm probably going to end up playing that list at War Machine Weekend. But I've been looking pretty heavily at casters like Fiona and Ashlyn and maybe even Constance Blaze, just because I think the key to beating Coven is to be able to take a big hit on the chin and then just come back and obliterate. So you're a strong defensive, like Fiona's defensive feat is like the cav are still a problem because they get their three dice attacks that go to two dice attacks, right? So they're going to kill some infantry, but if you can throw like some other layers on there, like I'm thinking press gangers that are tough, and then Alexia 1 for some recursion or whatever off of them, you can maybe kind of weather the bank, and then everything else shouldn't really do much. And then you get to, you know, come back into them. And I think that the defensive feat is okay against Ghost Fleet. I don't think it's great into Ghost Fleet, because I think that Denegra just layers so much stuff on top. But if you can combine it with a reasonable chance of assassinating, the ability to remove stealth, whether it be a Reinhold, in the case of Mercs, Reinhold, or the Siege Crawler, something
Battle
like
Toilet.
That. Yeah. One of those two things in your list to put pressure on her, to keep her from doing that 14-inch run, 3-inch, you know. And then you pop your feet defensively when you get into the scenario. And so those first two turns are just kind of like a you know, pillow fight of some kind. Like, that's kind of, I think, where you want to go. If you're a Merc player, I think that's where you want to go. And I think Kador shares a lot of similarities with Mercs in terms of, like, how they can deal with with what's going on currently.
Mercs and Kador prior to... at least prior to the mercenary inclusion, were two of the three factions that was Ghost Fleet always.
Right.
Like,
yep. So that's kind of where I've been. I like this awesome list that I've been playing. I guess I don't know if we want to necessarily.
Sure, spill it.
So it's a list that I think Rob Shepard came up with initially. Charles Soong made an adjustment or two to it, and... may have played this. No, he didn't, because it's irregulars. So did not play this list with the WTC. But he's the one who shared it with me. And then I made one change to their combined list, which was to get rid of Gorman and put in Midwinter. But the list is Ostrom in irregulars with five gun bunnies, just the hand cannon shot, the actual gunners, two drillers, one basher, one battle engine, a min unit of Forge Guard, a unit of Kazi Eliminators, Ayana and Holt, Eilish Garrity, Orin Midwinter, and Iris 1. So the list is capable of putting a lot of damage onto Denegra, the battle engine, the battle toilet, so to speak. It'll strip stealth from her, and you can snipe Iris.
The battle toilet strip stealth?
Yeah.
Oh, brutal.
It's got a periscope, so... yeah, it is a Reinhold.
You'll be a naughty.
And so you can strip stealth. Iris with snipe can threaten to strip her focus off.
Well, also, Iris with stealth is the coven nightmare. It's like, Egregore's like, ugh.
Nope, unfortunately.
No, tell me not. Egregore's
straight immune to that crap.
Oh my god, are you serious?
Yep.
Yep.
God
damn it. Just has a rule on it that says no Iris.
Yep, it literally says if an ability would strip focus from this model, it ignores it.
Holy crap, are you serious?
Yeah, otherwise, yes. Like, that particular pairing of, like, remove stealth and shoot it with Iris would be, like...
The nuts, yeah. That is ridiculous.
Right. So, unfortunately, that doesn't work. But Iris is still fine when she's, you know, removing... you know, she can always remove key models or whatever through the course of the game. She's got a magic gun, so, you know, she can try to take on a... pistol wraith or something if need be, whatever, when she's not trying to threaten Denegra's life. But yeah, so you've got the battle engine. The other nice thing about, I actually really hate the dwarf battle engine just in a vacuum, right? Like, you just look at it and you're just like, this thing doesn't boost its attack rolls. Rat 6, the two guns are pow 15s, but it's only against huge base models that they boost damage at all. Otherwise, it's just like... 4-inch AoEs are nice, but it doesn't put out a lot of output for 18 points. It basically, and recurring dwarfs, as dwarf infantry currently stands, is mostly useless. I mean, you can set it up to make it so that your opponent, it eats up some opponent's attacks, like the recursion every turn. But getting two Forge Guard back a turn is not like, it's not like a big cash in. You're not like, yeah, I paid 18 points for a couple Forge Guard that are going to die to like two extra attacks from my opponent this turn. So I don't like it in general, but it turns out that in the meta, and actually against Krix as it stands, particularly Ghost Fleet, it's pretty good. One, it's kind of like how you used to talk about the Conquest being the anti-colossal. Well, this is the anti-Battle Engine, Battle Engine, although it's actually also anti-Colossal. Because with Eilish Garrity and Fire for Effect on it, you get a 70-ish percent chance to crit stagger. And if you crit stagger a Battle Engine or a Colossal, that's a big game. It's also 4-dice 15 and another 3-dice 15. So it is an example of one of the things that probably can shoot the Wraith Engine off the table, as long as it gets magic weapons. And in the while it's shooting it off the table, it actually can keep the Wraith Engine from attacking, which is kind of sweet. So it's positioned well. That and the fact that it's 40 boxes, 20 armor, and a huge base makes it very easy to get positioned across two zones. And with Orin Midwinter behind it, Denegra can't parasite it. The Witch Coven can't. Was it Curse of Shadows? Is that the armor debuff? I can never remember.
Yep. Curse of Shadows.
So that doesn't go up on it. So they just have to like semi honestly kill an arm 20, 40 box model. Like they can apply Dark Shroud, obviously, and Denegra can feed on it. But those are like the only way they're debuffing it. So it's actually somewhat difficult for them to remove, which allows you to kind of use it to play on scenario for a few turns and not, you know, not get down super, super early and super immediately, which is nice. And then the gunners, and even the drillers, and then like Holt's guns and, Eris's gun and the random rat-a-tat shots off the quad cannon from the siege engine or siege crawler and, you know, maybe a chain lightning at some point from Midwinter. And Ostrom's hand cannon, like it all adds up to the point where you're doing enough per turn to stay slightly ahead of the average recursion.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're definitely not making up like a ton of ground. You add in the ability to unstoppable force your battle group and bounce people out of zones or away from zones and pick up an odd point here or there.
Mm.
And you can play a game with the list and it goes fleet. I do think it gets potentially trounced. I haven't played a game into Darkest. Well, you just like coven feats and you do nothing.
Yeah.
And then you're like bane cav kill an arm 20, like 40 box model, like pretty trivially.
Mm-hmm. Right. Very trivially.
Right. Like even without the ability to put Curse of Shadows on it, it's dying. So are your heavies. Like the gun bunnies are going to die. Like I don't think it's a good matchup there. So I don't think it's a like long-term answer. Happily, not enough people listen to the cast that I feel like I'm going to run into a bunch of people who are like, I'm going to drop Dark Host because you don't feel confident. I heard on the podcast that no one listens to me while I'm talking. So.
Yeah. Well, like Keith was saying, I mean, he's told me personally, basically, like, if your cricks, if they, like, even catch a whiff of, like, Ghost Fleet answer, they just play Dark Host because they probably just house you anyways. And then, like,
Well, it depends on the person. I know that Tim Banky will play Ghost Fleet just because it's Ghost Fleet. And he's like, nah, your answer's not good enough.
Yeah.
But
this is how I know that Testament of that is actually an answer, because I sent the list to Banky when I first came up with it. I was like, hey, go test this for me because I don't have time to play. He's like, this is an interesting list, John. He gave it to one of his locals who had just started playing Protectorate, beat Banky 3 out of 4 games, and he's just like, okay, yeah, this list is real because, you know, I'm playing against some guy and I'm Tim Banky. That's literally what he said to me. Playing Ghost Fleet. So
that sounds like you, John, not like Tim. Are you sure you're not projecting?
No, he literally said that. I don't think I'm projecting. I'm pretty sure he said that.
The part that John's leaving out is the part that he wrote in his head, which is Tim was like, and I'm Tim, but you're like John, so you would beat me 100 games out of 100 games.
No,
on this list.
I would never, ever, 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 ever say that.
Yeah, no, you in your mind, Tim Banky said it.
No.
Classic Don Jamaris.
Classic Don.
Yeah.
Yep.
Scott, I felt bad about beating you so bad 2 times in a row. Like I'm gonna
classic Don.
Yeah.
Right there. That's some classic Don.
I mean, I can only take this into perspective, John. You spent all night net decking me.
No.
Like, of course you're going to win.
I built that.
Like, you had not only you, but Brent also modified his list pair so he could trounce me. And that also changed the list pair that Brandon and Carl brought. So, yes, when you walk into a tournament, there's four people with a crosshair on the back of your head. You're probably going to go down.
I mean,
it's fine.
That happens to Keith in every tournament, except there's like 40 people with crosshairs on the back of Keith's head.
Yeah.
He's still 6-0s. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying you're
Keith.
All I have to do is prove one example where it's not true. Like
we're just saying that if you're going to be such a villain, you should play a better faction that can, like, prop you.
But I can't talk about that. No, it was actually really funny.
Scott, I literally shared that list. I shared that. Go ahead. Go ahead, Scott. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, there was a thread on the Signar asking how to deal with Madrak 1, and Keith replied, play Haley 3 Gravediggers. And then someone else, I can't remember if it was the Troll Bloods group or the Signar group, but and then someone replied, Keith, is Haley 3 Gravediggers your answer to everything? And then
Colin.
I replied right below it. That was Colin. And then I remember replying right below it. I'm like, no, Keith's play skill is Keith's answer to everything. Well, that's good for Keith. But it's not good for me because I'm not there yet. So I have to
get good.
I have to be careful about these things. I know I'm trying to get good. It's just not working out with a little bit.
Actually, so that brings up Keith earlier. You had said Signar has it and it's locked in, like their Ghost Fleet answer. So do you want to let us in on what that is?
It's Haley 3 Gravediggers.
Oh, Haley 3 Gravediggers.
It's like the unit of long gunners. The trencher long gunners are just like, yeah, we've got Ghost Fleet handled basically on our own. It's like, but what do you guys do against Dark Fleet? And then the dog just goes, bark, 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 and then everything loses stealth, and then they all die too. It's pretty awesome. Also, Bane Cav are like, we can totally handle all your Def 15 models, and it's like, what if you can't charge? And then they're like, no, then we can't. Then we're very bad against them.
Yep.
Like, no impact attacks, so we get to walk up and make one Mad 8. Maybe Mad 8 horse kick and one Mad 8 sword swing. It's like, you can have that all day against the regular trenchers. And then there's like the grenadiers and the long gunners are hanging out behind them.
That actually, so that point is another thing that, just to kind of touch on it, corollary sideways, that makes me think Fiona might be like better than, because, you know, initially I looked at her and was just like, her Soulfire doesn't RFP. Sad, so let's move on. But the defensive feat and then also Ross Mercy actually kind of kicks Cav a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just, it's Aaron's self-sack, but on crack. Like, it's over the whole unit, like just anybody in the unit.
Yep.
So they can charge into a model, and then that model just doesn't die like a guy in the back does. So I think you can position such a way that even though you can't kill them and they may get a charge against you, you know, like under your defensive feat, like it's only, you know, a couple models that they impact in the front that, like, take the brunt, and then they don't die. Something else does, and they can't carry through. So,
yeah, because they can't make impact attacks, or they can't make impact attacks and move on, because they just won't allow it.
Exactly.
Like, if they don't charge something that's in their melee range after they're at the point of impact attacks.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I need to, after War Machine, it's probably too close to War Machine Weekend for me to mess around, but I definitely think Fiona may be a mercenary, maybe mercenary's best hope.
So, I do want to point out that most of the time we're just like, well, we're going to give this a try, and we think it gives us a game.
That's all I want is to be able to play a game.
And that's like the best you can do.
Right.
No, it's a little frustrating.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah, so far my experience has been I can get almost a game into Ghost Fleet, and then I still lose. And then if I take that same list into Dark Host, it's like, what the hell is happening?
What game are you playing? Because I thought I was playing War Machine, but it sure doesn't feel like it.
Yeah. But so far, my big interesting like techs in the Ghost Fleet were like a random Strakoff list that didn't work, and a Sorsha 2 out of tier list that just 100% didn't work. It didn't work in ways I hadn't even conceived how bad it was. It was like, you know, oh, I've got Shatterstorm, and I've got Magic Attacks, and I've got, like, Einenholt and all these things, and none of that matters because I'm just going to lose that scenario. Like, you know, oh, I'm going to out-attrition you. Oh, but the game's not going to go past turn 3, so who cares? Like,
yeah.
Oh, and my caster just dies.
Sorry, Nigel.
No, carry on. I just had to point out that my caster also just dies also.
I can say from a troll perspective, with Keith's help and Brent and some other folks, Carl and Brandon, I've been able to get a a Grim 2 list that I'm pretty happy into that pairing. I've had a lot of people ask me for it. If it's okay, if it's not talking about Trolls too much, John.
Is it Troll Dojo?
Go ahead and spew out the list real quick.
It sounds like Troll Dojo.
It is a list, but okay. All right. All right.
I got it. It's Grim 2, and I actually think Grim 2, because I carry a torch for Grim 2, because I think he is the most underrated, possibly, caster in the game. Certainly the most underrated caster in Trolls.
Agreed.
As far as like a competitive caster that nobody plays. And I know we were talking about this list a while back, Scott, because you were having trouble finishing it. You had like the bones that you liked, but not the last few pieces. And actually I've given it to a couple of my locals and they've been playing it. We've made one additional change.
Oh, really?
Because of 2017. It probably makes the list overall worse, but I think it's still necessary, unfortunately. So it's Grim 2 in Creel Company, the theme that I don't think is really seeing any play at all right now.
It's not.
But it's the one with the War Wagon in it, so it should see play, because the War Wagon is totally insane, especially with the new stone. His battle group is Double Bomber, very shocking. Now, it doesn't need an Impaler like he used to. He takes the Squire, of course. And then the rest of the list is two War Wagons, the full stone with the regular Elder, Sons of Brag and Fire Eaters. The Sons of Brag and Fire Eaters were how we finished out the list. That was like, we talked about it and played around with some different ideas, because that 18 points can be Scattergunners, and Scattergunners are totally insane, amazing under Grim. But it turns out all the other stuff in the list was killing all the infantry fast enough / too fast as it was, and the Scattergunners weren't doing anything. So the list needed some more armor cracking than just bombs. And Sons of Brag fills that role. And the Fire Eaters with boosted 12s kind of fill that role. And then for free cards, it was originally two Thumper Crews, but I think as a concession for flags, with a solo was necessary, so we switched it to one Fellcaller and a Thumper Crew. And the Fellcaller basically only Fellcalls himself, but he can Fellcall himself, so he's fine. You could also play Braylon in the same spot if you wanted. I think they're about equivalent as far as acting on their own goes. But it does, those double War Wagons are really, really hard to remove, even for some cricks, because they're armor 21 under the stone with 36 boxes. So with an armor debuff, some work can be done, but only if you allow Denegra's pirates to charge them, and only if like the Witch Coven can get a significant number of Bane Cavalry on them. And Grim has the ability to remove a big chunk of either army in one go every turn.
That's actually been the thing that has been probably the strongest with that list, is like, not only do you have just a blistering, like, you have the ability to respond very rapidly to wherever the battle goes, but on top of that, like, you can just pick up so many models a turn off of those battle engines. And then, because the battle engines have Quake on their big gun, and they have Into the Breach, it's not Into the Breach, but it's Shooting Gallery. They have Shooting Gallery, plus you have Grim's Feet, plus you have Mortality if you can land it. Like, it's really interesting, because Denegra or Coven, well, Coven, the ball can't get knocked down, but Denegra has to be really careful about how she plays that game, because if anything is close to Denegra, you'll just shoot it, knock it down off Quake, and then Denegra just dies. And then because you have Grim, you can pull stealth off of Denegra. Grim's Feet typically can get rat scores higher than she can debuff. So you typically can almost always end up with like a positive, especially if you're engaging battle engines. So it actually does a really good job of like boxing her into a hole. The Dark Host matchup's a little bit more interesting, and I don't want to go too crazy into it, because I promised I wouldn't talk Troll Dojo. But there's definitely a game there, and it's a very playable game. What have your players been finding with it, Keith?
They just started playing it, and so far they've been playing it into stuff that I probably wouldn't advise dropping it into, because there's a lot of Grimkin going around. So I've been seeing it get dropped into Heretic 4 or the Heretic 4 heavies and stuff like that, and doing okay. Like it battles for a while and then loses, because that's not what it's designed to do. Like it doesn't fight quality heavies as well. But one nice thing we did notice about the list is all the knockdown in it really enables the Rune Bearer's mortality.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cause once you get a model knocked down, you're like, oh, that's a handy dandy. Like, that model made a tough check, or that member of the unit, I didn't quite break armor with the blast damage. It's like, oh, bloop, mortality. Yes, delicious. But yeah, I'm not at all sad that nobody plays Grim 2. It's totally fine. Troll players, continue to think that you're gonna your Madrak 2 army will make it to Melee with me. It's gonna work one of these times, I promise.
You posted that online. You're like, dear troll players, please don't ever take Grim 2 in any of your pairings ever against Krix. Thank you, Krix players.
Exactly.
I just died laughing.
No, I promise. I promise Madrak 2 will make it to Melee this time. It's going to be fine.
Keith, did anybody ever told you that you seem a little disingenuous sometimes?
No.
Huh.
No.
Weird.
Has anyone ever told you that, John?
Yes. When I'm being genuine, actually, more often than not.
It's when he's being genuine that's the most confusing, to be honest.
It is.
My radar's not working.
Just like, he sounds like his normal self, but like my gut feeling is that he's telling the truth, which can't be right.
Yeah. There's no value for it to be insincere, but...
But I'm pretty sure he has only one mode of operation.
You guys are so unfair.
Classic Don.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm back in the saddle now. I'm ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty fired up. I'm really happy with my list pair. I think the thing I'm most happy with is both lists play extremely well in Deathstar 2017, which is amazing. Like, I can't really play my Colossals because they're speed 4, and my battle engine is speed 4 on a huge base, and in 2017 it just doesn't work that well. Like, sometimes against a really fast army, you don't even get to the zone before you get jammed out of it.
Just get bulldoze on it, bro.
I mean, that would help. For sure. So, yeah. So, like, all the jack-heavy lists that I want to play just don't really work very well in 2017, I don't think.
Except for you-know-who.
I hate that caster so much.
John, if you want to play him on, you can play him on.
It's all right, John.
Yeah, I would. If I wanted to play him on, I would. Look, I played him on at the ATC last year. I swore I'd never play him again, and then I had to play him at the WTC. All right? I'm done with Amon. No more Amon.
John, you don't have to be a self-loathing Amon player. We support you.
He's so
Your friends all care about you, John. If you want to just come out and play Amon at Raza, then we'll support you, and we're behind you.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. Brandon Shirley has basically solved it. The Amon and Rattles the list, so it's like not much point in getting in there. Like, but...
I hate that you guys know me so well. You just know how to just hit me where it hurts bad.
It's true, though.
I'm sorry.
Brandon Shirley has solved it.
Yeah.
Those comments, I don't think anybody said that to hurt you, John. It's just that Brandon
Okay. All right. Whatever, Scott. You should be sitting here with these great big Cheshire grins on these guys' faces over here. They are fucking ear to ear right now. Oh, excuse me. This has been a pretty good cast. Like, it's almost an old school Muzan Minis cast.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically anytime any one of us plays a game, we almost have a good cast. Like, it's almost a good cast.
And Scott's doing an admirable Chad fill-in.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's not near salty enough.
I'm trying, but according to the Facebook group, like, I actually got a message from a listener who's like, Seabass, like, you're a really nice guy, and you seem like you have good enough intentions, but can you please get Chad back on the cast?
Okay,
whoever
sent that's a real jerk. I don't know who you are, but I'm calling you out right now on the podcast. You're a jerk. You didn't have to send that message. You chose to click send. You could have just typed it up in your own head and chuckled.
Yeah, chuckled.
Like the rest of us do. But you sent it.
Scott, I'm thankful that you're on the cast. You've breathed a lot of life into this cast. And you're...
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I'm thankful that I'm on the cast.
Yeah.
I'm very thankful that I'm on the cast. You know why? Because there's a guy, and he's a friend of mine, and he's making some sweet, sweet shirts. And I sent pictures of the shirts up. So if you guys want one, you need to let me know. But he said, quote, I would be honored if Muse would wear them. So I sent them to the Muse chat. Take a look at them. They're actually really cool looking. I think Josh would like them. So you guys need to check that out. And if you want one, you need to let me know.
I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it either.
I don't see it. Yeah, did you send it like 3 days ago?
It was a couple days ago.
A couple days ago? Well, there's a lot of dojo talk over the weekend, so it's might have got buried. Oh, here we go. I see it.
Nigel's like, they're talking about trolls.
Yeah. It's the beer. It's the, like, continuous drunk shirt. Actually, that is a pretty cool shirt.
That is a sweet shirt.
I
will take one, Scott. Give me a 2X, because I'm losing weight. So,
okay.
And I'll pay you for it. Just let me know what I owe you.
I'm talking to the buddy of mine who's making them, but he's pretty adamant that he doesn't. All he wants is for whoever he gives a beer to, or whoever he gives a shirt to give him a beer and say hi to him. I think that's what he wants. So I'm trying to get the costs, and that way he doesn't have to bear it all alone. But it'd be cool.
Yeah, no, I'll absolutely pay for a shirt. So you can tell him that it's not really. I appreciate it, but
yeah, I would definitely wear one of those.
I would wear it all the time.
It is Josh's spirit animal.
John, how do you pronounce David's name? David's last name there.
Wachowski, I think.
Is it Wachowski?
Yeah,
like, I'm not. It's like Wachowski,
like the brothers, sibling, sisters.
It's not quite like that, but there's like some extra. It's like extra Polish.
Wachowski.
Yeah, I don't know. It's something like that. I've talked to him a lot of times.
He's the seething ginger.
No, seething ginger is Jonathan LeClaire.
Uh huh. Dave's got like an online name that I thought I remembered, but anyways, David Wachowski,
Wachowski.
November 11th and December 2nd, he's running two tournaments. One's a 75-point steamroller. These are both in Bethlehem, PA. The entry for the first one is $10. Prizes for 1 through 3, credit based on attendance. Regular old tournament. The second one's a little more interesting because it's a $25 entry fee, 75 points. And it's first place is a choice of any two Colossals or Gargantuans you want. Second and third is a choice of Gargantuan. And then four through six. So he's like, there's like a deep payout. But it's like they're just giving away Colossals, I guess, for some reason. Both of them are in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So they're in the East Coast. Check it out. Look them up on Facebook. Attendees also get 20% off on all purchases those weekends.
That's awesome.
So at the store that he's running at, which I believe he said, and also free pizza at the tournaments.
That's pretty
actually,
sweet.
I'm just going to send this out now. If you're in basically an 8-hour drive from me and you want me to come to your tournaments, just let me know about it, because I'm terrible about finding out about tournaments. Like, there'll be a tournament in, I don't know, Kansas City, and I won't know about it. I know Brandon Shirley will have told me about it, but I will have forgotten.
Next week, John's asking for appearance fees.
Yeah. No, I want to go to more local tournaments, but I want to know about them. So if you invite me, I'm more likely to come.
Let me know where your tournament is. Pay my registration fee. No, that's carry not. My models around also, for me and give me $15 per.
If you're 8 hours drive, if you're 8 hours drive from John, just give him a half hour heads up that you're almost in town, and then he'll play you anytime.
That's where I.
So yeah. I will say, in classic Don Jamaris move, so I show up to this steamroller in Springfield or Springdale, and I walk in. And people were kind of surprised to see me there because they were like, we didn't think you would be here because you just had your chest cut open. And so they're getting ready to go into round one. I ask for a loss in round one so I don't have to play, so I can just kind of get myself put together.
You're really milking the surgery, like, Seabass. Come on.
I am. No. Just hear me out, though. So John is like, I don't want to walk back there. And I'm like, do I need to carry your models, John? And he's like, yes, you do.
I did. That is not what happened.
No. I went to reach for him, and then John looks at me, and he's like, Seabass, you just can't even carry them right, and grabs his model and indignantly walks off.
That is not how that happened at all. You offered to carry my models, and I'm like, Scott, you just had surgery. Shut up. And I carried my own models back. That is actually what happened, but that's fine. I did whine because they're like, John, you're at the way back of the room, and I was kind of being myself. I was like, that's a really long ways away, but yeah.
Classic John.
Yeah, that is classic John. I don't like to overexert myself on days like tournament days.
Like days that have a Y at the end.
It's true. Scott, I do plenty of things, like, truthfully. You don't have to make stuff up to throw me under the bus.
I was actually literally going to say that to Scott. Like, you need to just don't. It's like you don't want to be fake news, right? Because then, like, you get called out and then none of your stories get believed. But, like, there's way too many great John stories that happen, like, almost every single day.
Yeah. Fair.
Well met, sir. Well met.
Scott, I enjoyed our game.
It was a fun game. It was kind of frustrating to... I was more kicking myself in the hindquarters because I couldn't, like... It just felt like no matter how hard I tried, I just couldn't get my head clear and I couldn't get my head straight. Like there, the whole thing with the bomber, like, I let my bomber frenzy for no good reason. I just didn't bother to do math. And then on top of that, after he frenzied, I left the fury on him. So halfway through the next turn, I'm looking, like, after he frenzied, on my next turn, I'm looking at him going, why does he still have a fury on him? And John's like, that shouldn't be there. And I'm like, what? Are you sure? Oh, God, I think you're right. So then I pulled the fury off, and then I set it off to the side. And then I look at Madrak, and Madrak doesn't have enough fury on him. And then I'm like, well, wait a minute, how did this work? So, like, I was a hot mess. It was bad.
I've seen Clay Matthews, like, in a pregame warm-up, actually sniff smelling salts, like, you know, to, like, get himself going. You might need that. Like, just make sure you're awake. And then, yeah, then you're good to go.
Maybe check with your chest position first.
Yeah, just get pumped up. Yeah. And, yeah, also the chest position. I don't know if the smelling salts, do you think that could cause anything like that?
I don't know. I mean, Scott, we can play the Grim Team matchup if you want. I think that's probably favorite for you, but I'll do my best.
I don't think it's favored because there's a lot of things in your list that are going to make life really hard on Grim. For example, like martyring really makes it hard to get the battle engines to go and do the things they need to do. But I think there's enough knockdown. There's enough alternate effects. I can get the rats high enough that I can consistently apply pressure to Harbinger, which is going to force you to have to play your back a little bit. So I'm kind of curious how that matchup goes. I think it's probably a 50-50 game. Like, it's a game. I don't think it's heavily advantaged in one way or another.
No,
I definitely want to play it so I can find out.
I think you're heavily advantaged. But like I said, I'll do my best. It'll be fun.
Shocker. Like, John Damaris said that he's walking into a bad matchup. Who's never heard this before?
Well, he didn't say that about your last matchup.
Mm-hmm.
So
no, he didn't.
Yeah, that should have been clue number one, Scott. When I posted the list in the chat, and I said, "Hey, I think this Windmills Madrak won," and then we were at the tournament, and I'm like, "I'm playing this list, but I think Windmills Madrak won," and you're like, "Which list should I play? I'll play Madrak one." And then you got windmilled, and I'm like, "I don't know what else I can do." Like, I literally told you that was going to happen.
Said John, sincerely, is what's been playing in my head after everything that he says for like about the last 15 minutes. It's just like always, you know, like remarked John sincerely, said John sincerely, chuckled John sincerely.
So the list pair I brought to that tournament was Doomshaper 3 and Madrak 1. It's not a good list pair, and I knew it wasn't a good list pair walking in.
Why did you bring because that? That weak stuff.
Because I valued the knowledge more than I did the win. I wanted to see where I had bad matchups, and I wanted to try the models that had changed in CID most recently. And the only way I could do that and get games back-to-back to help me understand it a little better was to just go to a tournament and try it. So I knew it was a fairly weak pair. I didn't realize how bad it was, to be completely transparent. I didn't quite realize how bad it was walking into it, and then I kind of, you know, got smacked around a little bit, and it opened up my eyes. And
well, don't feel bad, Scott, because Brent literally told me the night before that he didn't think the matchup was that good for me into Madrak. I'm like, okay, Brent.
Brent was telling me that, and then Brandon was telling me, he's like, I don't think Kane 3 is that bad for you. And I'm like, Brandon, are you serious? Like, I think this is terrible for Madrak 1. Like, Kane 3, I think, just shoots it off the table. Brent and I went ahead and played that game.
Yeah, kaboom, kaboom, all gone.
I assume that Kane 3 is probably the best Signar answer, followed maybe by Siege, but Kane 3 seems like a nightmare for Madrak.
If you play double warders, do you get... I mean, all you have to do is get there, right? And then his stuff starts to explode fast?
I think they're pretty
capable. The
boosted
shots are so powerful that, like...
Yeah, I suppose.
He's killing a warder with a single shot. Like you will run out of shield guards before he runs out of shots.
Yeah, that's true, I suppose, because it's boosted POW 12, and warders are armor what?
21.
21? So off 9?
No, they're boosted POW 15s.
Oh,
but they're boosted the POW 15.
Yeah.
And it's two shots apiece.
Yeah.
Like, no, right, I think it's terrible for
I forgot about his feet, okay? I was just like, what's a lot of boosted POW 12s? Excuse me for not thinking about range synergy because it shouldn't exist.
Like, when I very first, like, looked at the list and, like, truly beheld it in its awful glory, I was like, what kills that? And I was like, oh, Kane 3 kills it if I was a Signar player.
It's actually really interesting, though, because I'm not sure that Signar has the room in their list pair to dedicate that answer for me, for Madrak 1. I don't think they have the room in their list pair to do that.
I think they got room for Kane 3. There's always room for Kane.
Kane 3 answers a lot more than just Madrak 1.
Yeah, he crapped on enough stuff that he's like, maybe.
Yeah, I think...
Once you put Haley 3 Gravediggers in your number one spot, you can basically put whatever you want in your number two spot.
Okay.
World's your oyster.
Well... So if you're Keith Christensen, the world is your but the average Signar player probably doesn't have room. Like, they probably – because that's – and I'm of course I'm making a joke out of it, but that's kind of the contemporary thought right now, right? Is that Haley through Gravediggers handles like the generic mass of stuff, but to deal with like other things, like you're going to need a more specific answer. So that's why people are turning to Siege, right? For that Crix answer, right?
I think Siege is going to go away. Like the people haven't tried Haley through Gravediggers into the Crix yet. Like Siege was like, oh, what do we do before Gravediggers came out. Now that Gravediggers is out and this Wednesday is when the Long Gunners get released, Siege is gone back on the shelf. You won't see him again.
Although I do want to see
Triumph is still terrible.
I do want to see Siege with
that both
double battle engines.
Siege is, Siege is going back on the shelf, an erotic novel by Keith Christensen.
It should be. Siege was never off the shelf. I literally have never seen Keith play Siege. I've seen him. I literally have seen him poo-poo Siege for like 7 years now.
Keith, do you even own a Siege, Keith?
Yeah, I do. I see his gun is sitting somewhere here on my desk, actually. Yeah, there he is, unassembled on my desk.
I've seen him argue with Billy Robin about Siege. I've seen him argue, like, the list just goes on. Jay Larson, it just goes down and down.
Me.
And yeah, you, everyone else, Colin.
Number one Siege hater, Keith Christensen, by a landslide.
Yeah, I mean, Keith, if you want to play Siege, you can play Siege.
No, it doesn't really work that way, John.
Yeah, pretty sure we're pretty well established that I do not, in fact, want to play Siege.
Well, I think it's pretty well established that I, in fact, do not want to play Amon.
Keith is not in the closet. He's been very clear about where he stands. But, John, it's just like, yeah, sure, sometimes you'll drop, like, a very sincere statement about not wanting to play Amon, but then you look longingly at him in your case, and you just kind of stroke the
And then you show up to a tournament with him, like...
Yep.
You have played at least three more tournaments with Amon than I have with Siege.
Boom.
Yeah, well...
Headshot. Explosivo.
I have played more tournaments with Fianna the Black's Mark II Theme Force than I have with Siege.
Oh, why? Why have you?
Well, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Muse on Minis. I think we're out of gas, right?
Yeah,
so,
we are.
We're done.
This has been John.
Josh.
Nigel.
Keith.
Seabass.
Thanks for listening.